Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Andrew Beck and Thomas Erie, as this is another edition of the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable. In this episode, we'll be discussing many foam-related topics, but before we do anything, I have to welcome both of my co-hosts back to the show. First, the editor of Cottagers Confidential, Andrew Beck. Andrew, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Russ.
Well, listen, it's an international break. But I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to talking foam with you today.
Oh, me too. International breaks are always tough for me, especially now that the Sounders are respecting international break. I have nothing to watch for, 2 weeks, and it's just kind of kills me. I'm not a huge fan of international soccer. So, I mean, I watch the U.S., but I don't watch any of the other countries really. So.
No, I hear you. Well, I have to tell you this: I actually did watch Chris Martin play for Scotland. We're going to be talking about him in a little bit, and he actually scored a goal and was partially responsible for another goal for Scotland because he was fouled in the box. Very interesting stuff. I watched a little bit, but I have to admit I did tune in to watch Chris Martin. I actually liked what I saw from him. But before we do anything, I have to welcome our other co-host back to the show. Thomas, it's been a little while. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me on again, Russ, and I look forward to the show. Sounds like it's going to be a great time.
It should be, my friend. Have you been going through a little foam withdrawal like myself?
Definitely. Just looking at Twitter and not seeing anything really of interest is quite frightening.
It's been an interesting week. But timing now gives us a chance that we can look back at the transfer window, and we're going to look back at several signings and also a few departures for foam. And we have some other topics to discuss in this hour, so I look forward to it. But I am going to start with Andrew. And, Andrew, I know we're going back a few weeks, but we're going to talk about some signings near the end of the transfer window. And let's start here. I want to get your thoughts on the signing of center back Ragnar Sigurdsson. Now, this whole thing flew underneath the radar. Not many have heard about this potential signing for Fulham. Next thing you know, he signed. What are your thoughts about Fulham adding this center back to what they already have?
I liked it a lot. He seemed to be could do well in the Euros. So that's a little frightening that he may have just turned a good Euros into a big payday for himself. But he's been playing in fairly big leagues around Europe. The only caveat I had was that he's a little on the older side than I would like. But center backs tend to usually age pretty well, and their peak years are more like 29, 30, 31. So he's still in that peak age for a center back. So I can't really complain too much about it. The only question I really have is now what the center back depth chart is. Is he ahead of Callister Maddle, or is he the third center back? With our first right back being out injured, maybe you push Callis out to right back and you go with Sigurdsson in his place. Sets up some options, at least, which is something we haven't had in a long time. It's always been, or for the last few years, it's like, yeah, we have center backs, but none of them are really good, so what does it matter that we have options? At this point, we have options, and they seem to be good options.
Absolutely. Competition's great, and you bring up a good point. Where does he fall on the depth chart? Does this also give Savisa the option playing 3-5-2 at some point? That would be interesting because he is a fairly accomplished center back with a very good history and obviously played recently well for Iceland in the Euros. Thomas, over to you. What are your thoughts about this on the player coming and also what Andrew just shared about where he could fall in the depth chart?
I was very excited when he came in. Obviously, I watched him at the Euros, and he really stood out in the game against England, especially when he scored the goal. When we signed him, I was very excited. And he's played at Copenhagen and Krasnodar before us. And Copenhagen played in the Champions League in the 2 years that he was there. And so I'm quite excited because that gives him another level of experience that the team just really didn't have. And as for the depth chart, I think he is better than Callis, just from what I've seen of him. But Callis has played at a very high level for us so far this year, so I would like to see him kind of slot in maybe as the third center back in a back three. and allow ourselves to play more attacking, or like Andrew suggested, which I think is more realistic, Kalas moves out to the right, Odoi moves to the left, and Sigurdsson and Model in the middle.
Okay, very good. Right back to you, Andrew, before we move on. We're talking about options, and now Savisa has several options here. I've already said this. Would you like to see him at some point use three center backs?
Probably at some point. I think it kind of depends on the team you're going up against. The reason the back three kind of fell out of favor is that so many teams are playing like the 4-2-3-1, and when you have three center backs and there's only one opposing striker, it kind of makes the third center back superfluous, and that's kind of why that formation died out. But now the teams, if you're up against someone who's doing a 4-4-2, it does make more sense to go with the third center back. So I like that we have that option available to us if we need it. If we're playing a team that's an attacking team, a tough attacking team who plays a 4-4-2, we can roll that out and, you know, kind of counteract that.
No, that's a good point. It could be a matchup situation. That's why I wanted to bring it up against certain opponents. He might want to bring out the 3-5-2, the three center backs that could actually take advantage of what the other team is doing. So that's why I wanted to bring up the subject. We haven't seen it yet, but we did see it last season. I think at some point we might see the 3-5-2, and we have another center back that could fall into that group, which is always a good thing. All right, Andrew, right back to you. We've already seen this player for one match, Niskens Cabano. Thoughts on him when he came to Fulham, and thoughts on now that you've seen him for a match?
He kind of seems like he fits into the mold that Slavisa is going for, where he wants, you know, pacey attacking midfielders that can probably play they can play behind the striker, they can play on either wing, they could maybe play up top in a 4-3-3. It's just we seem to have a lot of those guys who are super interchangeable. You've got Aite, Aluko, Cabano. It's a good way to build your team, where you've got a lot of guys who kind of do the same thing at the same level. So if a guy's out, a guy's away at international duty, where I believe Cabano is going to miss some time for the African Cup of Nations this year. So, you know, when he goes away, you can just slot someone in who kind of does the same thing. He played in the Belgian Pro League, which, as far as I can tell, is about the same level as the Championship, maybe slightly lesser league, so I'm not too worried about him adjusting to the quality. And he's right at that age where you're thinking he's about to hit his peak years. For that, his type of player, you know, the 23, 27 to 28, that's kind of his peak. And he's, you know, right at the beginning of his peak, so we've got him signed up through his peak years, so that's always a great thing.
No, that's a great point there, Andrew. And before I go to Thomas, right back to you, because you brought up something that I've been thinking about with Floyd Aite, Sonny Aluko, and so many other midfielders. You have interchangeable parts that you can move across the chessboard. This now gives, again, we're talking about options, different ways to play, and in different situations we might see Cabano out there, and maybe some other situations we would see Aite. Maybe we'll see them together. But this gives Savisa even more options in the midfield.
Yeah, exactly, and it's guys who maybe offer. I mean, we don't see them day in and day out, so it could be that Cabano maybe is a little bit more technical than Aite. One's a better crosser. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of them to know for sure. But on the surface, they kind of seem like they're kind of interchangeable, where they're both kind of like pacey guys, comfortable out wide. Also could play up top in the right situations, comfortable behind the striker, and we're playing with basically three attacking midfielders all at one time. So if you're always going to be playing with three attacking midfielders, you're going to need a lot of attacking midfielders. And
right,
we certainly signed, it seemed like at one point we were signing all the attacking midfielders.
No, it's a good point because when you look at all the attacking midfielders that they brought in, and of course who you already have, it's like, well, how can these players all play? But I think they're all going to get their chance, and it could be a matchup situation. It could just be a certain situation, like you mentioned, maybe a player is going away for the African Cup of Nations, like you talked about with Cabano. So everyone's going to get a chance to play. This just gives more options for Slavisa to find the right fit for that match. All right, over to you, Thomas. What are your thoughts on the signing at the time and now, after seeing him for one match? Thoughts on Niskens Cabano with Fulham?
When he signed, I didn't really know a lot about him, so I started watching a couple of videos, and he clearly looked very skilled. He knew what he was doing with the ball, and that might have been something we were a little bit lacking in. Some guys weren't as good with the ball last year, but he's got it all figured out. In the game, that Blackburn game, he played very well. I think he was the most impressive player throughout the first 90 minutes until he came off, which I'm not concerned about him coming off in the 90th minute. Obviously, he played on Thursday, the Thursday before, I think, in a Europa League game, although he only came on for 15 minutes. But that's a lot of game time in a short period, so it's actually very impressive that he could manage that. And so I'm very excited to see what he offers in the future. I like how he covers Ayite now, because Ayite, although I think on the website we saw him training with the team, Cabano can also play where Ayite had been, which was the left side of midfield. And that's where Cabano obviously played in the game against Blackburn. So it's good to see that we kind of have depth behind all of our players, with Josebed, obviously he can play in the center, and McDonald and Christensen and the new signing, Johansson, and then Piazon. And so it's just good to see that we have all the depth lined up. So if players do get hurt, if McDonald goes down, we can just slot in Johansson and keep with good quality.
No, listen, it's a great point. It really is, because I think that's why you're seeing so many players brought in for depth reasons, because there are going to be situations, you need a bigger squad, and you just brought up Johansson. We're going to talk about him in 2 seconds. Again, more options. It's okay that we have other central midfielders. It's okay that we have other attacking midfielders. We're going to need them all. It's a long season. And there could be a situation, like I said, a certain opponent where you're going to play a certain player. You're going to play a certain style. Maybe Cabano's a better fit against a certain opponent than, say, Ayite. So this, to me, is just – it's a good problem to have. Having more talent,
definitely.
Better talent is a good problem to have, Thomas, before I go back to Andrew.
Yeah, I just like you said, better talent is always good to have. And, you know, this league is tough. Like, it's a very physical league. I don't know how physical the Belgian Pro League is. I don't think it's as physical. I think it's more of a technical league. But it's good to have people to cover you, because this is a physical league and people will get hurt. And so, you know, having depth is always nice.
Absolutely, my friend. Absolutely. All right, guys, let's move on. I'm going to bring Andrew back on. Andrew, I'm sorry. I was just getting a little feedback on your line when Thomas was talking, so I just put you on hold for just a second. Let's now talk about a player that actually Thomas was just talking about. I really want your thoughts on this player. Stefan Johansson. Happened at the near the end of the window, a central midfielder from Celtic. We had seen speculation from him for most of the window. Well, now he's a full-on player. What are your thoughts on this?
I like this move quite a bit, simply because that was kind of the position I think we were shortest at. It was kind of the backup for McDonald at the defensive midfield position, because Parker's more of kind of a box-to-box guy. Lossie Vigan Christensen could probably play there, but again, he's more of a box-to-box guy. I'm not sold that, like, Tunacliffe is the answer as the backup at the defensive midfield. So that was kind of the hole, and this guy really seems to fit it. The only thing that bothers me a little bit is the Scottish Premier League is not as good a league as the Championship. I know people in Scotland won't like to hear that, but once you get past Celtic, it drops off quite a bit. Maybe with Rangers coming back, they'll raise it a little bit. But then once you get past those top two, it usually drops off quite a bit. Since he was playing for Celtic, you can give him the benefit of the doubt that he's probably better than the average player in that thing. So that probably makes him a fit in the Championship. It'll be interesting to see how he adjusts. But I do like that he was captaining Norway on this international break. He's still not very old. He has Champions League experience. He's played at Celtic the last few years. He knows what it takes to win. And I don't think he's going to have to be asked to be stepped in and be a starter right away. He's going to get a, you know, he's going to get a play when Parker needs a break. He's going to get a play when McDonald needs a break. If someone gets injured, he's going to get a play. So, he just doesn't have to step in with both feet and like just take over the position. He's got some time and he can compete. And if he's better than the other guys and force them to the bench, that's a great problem to have.
It is, Andrew. And, it's funny because I go back to one of the videos with Savisa talking about the window, and he mentioned that he wanted another central midfielder, and that stuck out to me. And then, of course, we bring in this player, Stefan Johansson, and I'm just thinking that it's all about competition. It's keeping everyone on their toes, and he's going to start the best starting 11, Andrew, that fits the match and also who's best to play. At that time, maybe someone's a little bit out of form. Well, now he has options. You know, sometimes players, you know, have a dip in form. So this is an opportunity to keep everyone at the top of their game. And if they're not at the top of their game, there's another option there. I think that's important to talk about, Andrew, because over the course of such a long period of time, not everyone's going to be at the top for 46 games.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, very good. I'm gonna bring on Thomas. All right, Thomas, back to you. I want to get your thoughts on the signing of Stefan Johansson. I saw mixed reviews from him up in Scotland from the Celtic supporters. I heard from one Celtic supporter that had good things to say about the way he played two seasons ago. I believe he was the player of the season, but he had a dip in form last season. What are your thoughts on Fulham signing Stefan Johansson?
I'm very excited. I like him a lot. I think he's a very good passer of the ball. And I saw what you were saying. A lot of people were saying that he wasn't very good based on his last season performances. But I believe he was linked or was trying to get a move away at the end of the transfer window a full year ago. And so I think that definitely can affect a player's play when he tries to get a move away and he wants the move away and he doesn't get it. And he might feel kind of upset, and it could take a mental toll on a player. I think that he slots very well next to McDonald because Ryan Tunnicliffe, although he plays with a lot of heart and he plays really hard every game, he's not a terribly good player. His passing isn't very good. He just plays hard, and he runs the full 90 minutes. And obviously, we've talked about this before, but Scott Parker, whether or not he can play 10 games straight, is still up in the air. Obviously, him being 35 years old, that's a lot to ask from a 35-year-old player. So having Johansson in the squad is definitely more good than bad.
Okay. Very, very good, Tate, there. Before I go back to Andrew, because I want to get Andrew's thoughts on this, you mentioned Ryan Tunnicliffe. What's his role now? Is he a situational player, meaning he's coming off the bench, maybe he plays in the cup matches? Where do you see his role now, Thomas? You know, is his role now more in the background, more of a squad player now?
I definitely think so, because I rate Christensen much higher than I rate Tunnicliffe, and so that puts him back at least two or three players in the depth chart, and that's maybe a sign for Ryan Tunnicliffe that he might need to go somewhere else if he wants to get consistent game time. But like you were saying, a situational player. He's a bruiser. He's rough. And if you got
yes.
a team that plays rough, you might want to put Tunnicliffe in there.
Absolutely.
And he'll play the rough game, and he'll allow the players like Cabano and the players like Ayite and the players like Josebet, who are not physical players. They're more technical, and he will allow them to play their technical game while still being a contributor to the team.
Right. That's why I wanted to bring that up, because I can see in certain situations where he could be valuable. So that's why I hope he's still – well, he is a member of Fulham Football Club for this season. There is no more emergency loan, so he is a Fulham player. So I see a role for him, but – it's going to be interesting exactly what that role is, and I'm going to bring Andrew back on because I want to get his thoughts on Mr. Tunnicliffe. So, Andrew, where do you fall on this? Because I think Thomas brings up a wonderful point that against certain opponents, you might want to use Tunnicliffe. You might want to start Tunnicliffe. But more often than not, see him as a squad player now.
Yeah, that was I'm trying to create a post where I'm trying to sort out what Fulham's actual depth chart is right now, and he's kind of one of the guys I've struggled with. I think he's probably like the third choice defensive midfielder. So you probably put McDonald and Johansson as like the true defensive midfielders before he would get a start, and then like the box to box guys, you've got Parker who can play that. I think Johansson can probably play that box to box role. There's some question whether Josebed can play that box-to-box role in this league, but he's in that. And Christensen is obviously, I think, ahead in the box-to-box type of guy over Tunnicliffe as well. So he's maybe third or fourth, or probably fourth in the box-to-box at best, and third in the defensive midfield at best. But, I mean, we're still alive in the League Cup. We're going to have the FA Cup games coming up. And then, you know, just getting through December and January with all those games, you're just going to need he's going to need to play some games in that time because there are just so many games to come up. Even though, I mean, I recently read a stat recently that they did, I think it was the top six leagues in Europe, that on average teams only had 15 guys who played 800 minutes or more. So you really, when you start to look at the squad, what you're going to pick is probably your 15 guys, and those are going to play almost all the minutes. And then you're going to have guys like Tunnicliffe behind him who are going to play, you know, maybe 800 minutes is the equivalent of like eight or nine games. So he's going to play like six, seven, eight games this year, probably for Fulham.
Right. Listen, I think he has a role. We'll see how defined it is, but I can see him being a player in the cup matches, and I can see him, like Thomas said, against certain opponents, being a valuable player to a tough player in central midfield that could really help out Fulham. So I see a role for him. I do see a role for him, but more often than not, I think it's going to be not a starter. I think there will be certain situations that I think you're going to see Tunnicliffe start. I could be wrong, but we shall see. All right, let's move on, guys. I'm going to bring Thomas back on the line. And, Thomas, I want to get your thoughts on this loan signing. This happened right near the end of the window. And, you know, again, a signing that came out of the blue. I like when Fulham do this. This is a loan signing for Fulham with Lucas Piazon from the other club in Fulham. David Holly does not want me to say the name of the other club in Fulham, so that's the way I always say it. But he is a striker / left winger. He's a Brazilian. Thoughts on this move for Fulham?
I'm very excited about Lucas Piazon. We saw him play against us for Reading, and he was very good. He scored a very nice goal in our, I think it was 3-2 win or 4-2 win, something like that. And he looks very skillful. He plays on the left wing and at striker, which we definitely needed another striker, and we needed another left winger because we never really got a clear answer from the club about what happened to Lucas Piazon. I mean, not Lucas Piazon, Floyd Ayite. And so he definitely covers us, and he definitely looks like a very nice player to have. He had a little bit – he's having trouble getting game time at Chelsea. He might end up like Kallis, and him and Kallis might end up the same and be eventually just sold because they'll never be good enough for Chelsea. I don't know. I mean, Jokanović said that he thinks Kallis can be good enough, but Piazza's clearly had a little bit more trouble. Both of the signings from Chelsea, like you said, have come completely out of the blue with no – information being spread beforehand. And so I wonder if Jokanović is trying to maybe have a connection with Chelsea to get some of those young talents, because he used to play there, obviously, and he probably knows the people there quite well. And it's always nice to have connections like that, because Chelsea, it's a good team, and they've got a lot of depth, and they need places to send people. So if they want to send them to Fulham, be our guest. I mean, they're all we've gotten from them so far are good players.
Right, and listen, I've heard some very good things about this player, and I look forward to seeing him play. I do want to mention this because I was curious about the situation with Floyd Ayite as well, Thomas, and I actually watched the video. It's right on the Fulham website. It's an update from manager of First Team Medical and Sports Science, Marco Cesarini, and he actually addresses Ayite in the video. So go to the Fulham website to check out the video. I believe it was, I want to say, from yesterday or the day before. And he says that I'm paraphrasing, but it sounds like Ayite is going to be okay, that it was just a one match. So hopefully he will be involved this week. Again, go watch the video, and you'll see what he had to say. But I have a feeling that he should be in the mix and hopefully back with Fulham soon. So I just want to share with you that I watched on this video about Floyd Ayite, because I'm sure you want to see him back soon.
Yeah, he's done great so far this season, and it looked like we maybe missed him a little on Saturday with his running and his work ethic. You know, it's definitely want to have him back as soon as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to just say one more time, go watch the video, and basically he doesn't say when Cesarini does not say when Floyd is coming back. He just says that he thought that, you know, talking about, I'm paraphrasing, that it was a one-match situation. So hopeful that he'll be back soon. We'll see. All right, I'm going to bring Andrew back on. Andrew, what are your thoughts about this loan signing for Fulham?
I wasn't that familiar with him as a player, to be honest. The only thing that I'd ever really remember when I heard his name, I was like, well, wasn't that guy that had the legal problems during the Pan Am Games in Canada? But so I looked him up, and that stuff apparently was all all behind him, so that's not going to be an issue in the future. I asked some of my friends who cover Chelsea about him, and they basically admitted that they were a little bit excited about him a few years ago when he was doing really well, scoring a lot of goals in the Netherlands, but who doesn't score a lot of goals in the Netherlands sometimes? So they basically admitted that he's not going to be a Chelsea player. So he's a guy that it's only a loan till January, because Chelsea, they're still like a chance if they could need him back, if, you know, everyone on their team gets hurt and they need extra players in January. Most likely we're probably going to have him for the full year, and it wouldn't so shock me if he does well here, if Chelsea were willing to sell him on to us. As Thomas brought up about Kallas, Chelsea is much, much higher on Kallas. All of the people I talked to about Kallas, and when I was talking to them about the two players, they seem to think that Kallas is going to be one of the future center backs there. And they didn't want him to have too much too soon, and that's why he's on loan again. Piazon, he's just kind of another one of those guys where you could probably play him at all three of the attacking midfield positions. I don't know if he can play out on the right, but I know he can play on the left. He can play behind the striker, and in the right formation, he can play as the striker. So, again, it's just getting a lot of guys who are similar. I think he's probably not quite as pacey as some of the other guys, but I know he's much more technical than some of the other players we brought in. So he's a good mix and match kind of guy. And even if he doesn't start a whole lot, he's a great player to have on the team.
Okay, very good. I look forward to seeing him play. All right, Andrew, right back to you. The final player I want to talk about, much speculation throughout the window with this player. It finally happened at the last minute. So I want to get your thoughts on Fulham signing Chris Martin from Derby County, striker, on loan. Again, it's funny. When we did the end of the transfer window special, it was all coming down. And when you look at the numbers for Chris Martin in his three seasons at Derby County, they are very impressive. I just want to give you something from an article from Steve Nicholson today on the Derby Telegraph, because this goes along with my thinking that he is someone that is going to score a good amount of goals. He said this in his article, talking about Chris Martin, his goal per game ratio for Derby County was 1 for every 2.5 matches. And that's pretty good. So that's kind of what you're going to be getting with Chris Martin. He's also a target man, but he can also move in the box. And as if you watched him play for Scotland, he can finish as well. So what are your thoughts about this signing? Is this the striker we need, Andrew?
I think so. He's kind of a similar player to Ross McCormick in a lot of ways, in that he's a striker, but he's also quite creative with the ball. Over the last, I think it's 3 years, it's he and Ross McCormick are 1 and 2 in the number of chances created in the entire division. And so that includes, you know, assists, key passes, shots that they created themselves. So he's creating for others as well as himself. The difference between him and McCormick is I think he fits into Slavisa's system a little bit more, where he's more of a bigger target guy, where McCormick is more of a guy who creates by dropping into the midfield and playing through balls to other people. Martin's going to stay up top, and he's going to create chances by holding the ball and then catching runners running onto him, and he can feed them the balls they run onto him, holding it up at the top. So I think he fits the system a little bit better. But he's basically, we've almost completely replaced Ross McCormick's production with one player and gotten a player that fits the system better. So I don't know how anyone can look at that and say this wasn't a great move.
Yeah, listen, I wanted this to happen. You know, I've talked to Andy Buckley-Taylor with the with his Derby County blog, and we were going back and forth because, and I said this on the end of the transfer window special as well, I asked him point blank, why are Derby County getting rid of this player? I don't get it. I don't understand it. Why is he leaving? Why are they trying to get rid of him? And he was basically telling me that it was a situation with a change of manager, Nigel Pearson, change of system to a 4-4-2 from the 4-3-3. It's really, that's what it really comes down to. It's a system situation, and I understand that and this might be a better fit for him playing now in Fulham's system. So again, this might be a win-win for Chris Martin and Fulham. So I'm excited. Let me bring on Thomas now and get his thoughts. Thomas, over to you. Is this the striker Fulham need?
Definitely. I think he is probably the best one we could have gotten this window. Without spending way too much money on someone like Asambolanga or Kodia. As Andrew said, I think he fits in the system much better. He's a pretty big guy. And McCormack wasn't. And if you look at the people we brought in, clear that McCormack wasn't really going to work. Aluko's really the only one we have, is not a big guy. And although he's fast and he can kind of draw the defenders away, he would definitely work a lot better with someone like Martin, where both of them are drawing defenders. Martin drawing defenders as the big guy, and Aluko drawing the defenders as a fast guy. And that opens up the space for Kearney, for Yozabed, for Ayite, and for Cabano to really exploit those open holes that the defenders leave when they go and track Martin, but they forget about Kearney, who's playing right behind Martin. And so that gives Kearney the chance, and we all know what quality Kearney has, and he can definitely finish the chances that Martin will no doubt provide him. And also, Martin will finish his own chances. He scored a lot of goals. As you said, I think you said 2.5 games per goal. And I just did the math right now with McCormick, and he's a goal every 2.3 games. So he's not far off. Martin's not far off what McCormick's done. And so I'm definitely very excited to see Chris Martin in the setup. I think he'll play extremely well. And he's not very expensive. We only paid $1.5 million on the loan fee for him. So if he doesn't play well at all, we don't have to pay the full, whatever, 7 or 8 or 6. I've seen so many different numbers. But we don't have to pay the $12 million we paid for McCormick. So I think it's a great deal for us.
I do, too. It's funny because that part of the deal has had some controversy with it. Why are we bringing in a loan player? But I see this as actually a good situation for Fulham, because if it works out, then they can buy him. You know, they have the option to buy. So this is actually, I think, a good situation for them. Before we move on, I'm going to bring on bring back my friend here, bring back Andrew. Andrew, what do you think about this deal? Because we talked about this again. I keep going back to the end of the transfer window special. Some fans were, you know, thinking, why are we bringing him on loan? But I actually think this is a really good situation for the club.
Yeah, it really is, because especially money-wise, so the first thing is that he was going to be more expensive than most of the other players we brought in, simply because he's from England, and players in England are always overpriced compared to players you bring in from Europe or other countries. You can kind of see that in the transfer fees we paid for some of these other players versus what Chris Martin. I think what I believe is probably going to be 7 or 8 million pounds total if we were to buy him. completely. But when a team transfers a player, they're going to pay the transfer fee in installments anyway. So you can basically just think of this, we paid the first installment of the transfer fee, but we have an out. If he doesn't play well, he can send him back. If Fulham gets promoted and they decide that he's not the striker that they want to bring up into the Premier League, they can send him back. They're not locked into him for 5 years. That's always a good thing for your team. They can be locked into him for 5 years because they've already negotiated what the fee is, but they don't have to be. So it gives them some outs, and I wouldn't be disappointed if all moves were a 1 year loan with the option to buy. I think that would improve clubs a lot, but obviously the selling club would much rather have all the money. They know they're going to get all the money right away versus doing the loan deal, but I don't see any real downside to doing the loan.
Neither do I. I see this as a good business move, and if he works out, they pick up the option. Simple as that. They pick up the option. And you bring up a good point. Think of it as the first of an installment. If this works out, then you just are going to pick up the rest of it, and then you take it from there. But I think this is a good move, not just for the player, but I think business-wise, you know, we all want them to spend money. Listen, they've spent money. They have spent money. But I think this is a good way to do it business-wise, because if he plays the way that I think he's going to play, well, they can buy him, and they have that option. And I think it's great to have that option. All right, Andrew, let's move on. Let's do this quickly. Let's talk about the departures. I'm going to give one to you and one to Thomas. Jack Rimmer, he went back out on loan to Shrewsbury Town. Thoughts on this?
It's kind of sad to see him go because I think his contract's up at the end of the year, so I'm pretty sure that we're not going to see him at Fulham ever again. And he was part of those like youth teams. He was, I think, the captain of some of those youth teams that had a lot of success, reaching the FA Cup final. I think what hurt him is he's kind of a tweener. He's not really athletic enough to play right back at a high level, and I think he might just be a little bit too small to be a center back at a high level. So I just don't think he really had a position, and, you know, it's sad because I really liked him. I like when the academy kids make good, but I think going down to Shrewsbury and probably trying to build his career from the smaller clubs and work his way up is, he's probably going to have more success that way than he would just being buried on the depth chart at a club in the championship.
For him, I agree with you. I think this is the right thing for him. It's unfortunate because I wanted to see Jack Rimmer make it at Fulham. I don't know if he will get that opportunity now, but for his career, this is the right thing for him. So I do wish him the best at Shrewsbury Town. And I think he did well last season on his loan. All right, I'm going to go back to Thomas. Thomas, here's one that has a little controversy to it. And the controversy goes along with the Sam Wallace article from the Telegraph. If you read that, he talks about that Stearman was a little bit of a bone of contention with a stat guy, Craig Klein. If you believe the article, it's speculation that the stats didn't weigh out on him, but Fulham signed him because I believe the stat guy did not come in until January. They did not really implement it, so Stearman came a year ago around this time, and, you know, I was high on him coming to Fulham. I thought he'd be a solid center back for him. He was okay, but not good enough in my book. What are your thoughts on him going back out on loan to Wolves?
Definitely what you just said. He was okay, but he wasn't good enough. He just wasn't. There were a couple games he was getting caught out of position, and he was just overall poor. He didn't offer anything going forward at all. He was completely defensive. He didn't have a great ability to pass the ball, and so that was definitely worrying. He gave the ball away a lot, and you just can't have that. And he didn't play very well. I'm surprised Tim Ream didn't get shown the exit window, but I think that it was definitely because Tim Ream offers versatility. And with Stearman, there wasn't really any versatility. We played him out on the right for one game. I believe it was against Middlesbrough last year. And he was awful. And so, I mean, you got to put him center, and then we signed Sigurdsson, and then he's got no place to play. And so get rid of him. And I think it's only a loan. I didn't see an option to buy put in there, which definitely could – I think it's cool that we did that, because let's say he goes back to Wolves and plays extremely well. Like, back to the old Richard Stearman, you know, man of the match, player of the season. Then we can just keep him. We don't have to give him back. They don't have to. We have the option to keep him for our next season if he plays really well. And we want to give him another shot. Then we can just keep him and give him another shot, which I think is nice because let's say we give up let's say we get rid of Ryan Tunnicliffe and he plays really well at the team we get rid of him, then we can't get him back, or we would have to pay to get him back. But with loaning someone out, especially a player that had no real place to play, let's say he plays really well against plays really well for Wolves, then we could have him back and we can try him out again and see if it works better the next time.
Yeah. Listen, I want to say this. You know, you and I are talking about it. He was a disappointment for me because I was really high on him coming to Fulham, but I do wish him the best. I hope he works out well at Wolves. He seems like a class guy. He was very good on social media. Seems like a really class individual. So I want to wish Richard Stearman the best. And like you mentioned, it's a loan, so he's technically still a Fulham player, so who knows what will happen in the future. All right, guys, let's move on. And I have a bonus segment for us to talk about. It's called Stat Attack. I'll actually bring you guys both on the line. Hopefully we'll get a connection. I can talk to you both. And I went to whoscored.com and I checked out the championship team stats and see where Fulham fell after five matches against the whole competition, the 24 teams. So I'm going to give you their rankings. And, Andrew, I'm going to start with you. And these stats I'm about to give you are more attacking, and I'm going to give Thomas the passing stats. We're going to start with the attacking stats. Let's start here. Shots per game, Fulham were fifth right now at 13.8 shots per game. Possession, Fulham are third, 55.8%. Passing success, this is a very significant stat, I think. We're first, 84.8%. Aerials won, 13th at 19.6. And then this is something that they do. They basically rate all the players, and Fulham's rating for their players as a team tied for first at 6.99, which is interesting. So they were tied for first in the overall ratings for the overall players. So I found that fascinating. Andrew, what stands out to you from these stats from WhoScored.com?
The shots per game, that's the one that kind of stands out for me the most. That we've improved the shots. Last year we weren't taking a lot of good shots. I'm working on trying to get the expected goals based on that for Fulham for the season to see if, you know, we're taking particularly good shots, because you can be a team that takes a lot of shots, and if they aren't good shots, well, it doesn't really matter. But it looks like by my naked eye that most of Fulham's shots are actually pretty good shots as well. So that is really nice. The possession thing is very interesting. I mean, I think that's part of Slavisa's system, that he wants to possess the ball a lot, and we seem to be doing that. It's especially good since we played a lot of road games to begin with compared to the other teams, and usually when you're on the road, you're going to see less the ball than you would at home. And if we're still out-possessing teams on the road, that's a really, really good sign. The 84% passing, to me, that's good. The one thing I do worry about the passing is there's a lot of research that says that all teams basically have the same success passing the ball if you normalize the pass type. So teams that have the highest pass completion rates are generally the ones having the easiest trying the easiest passes, and the ones that have the lowest pass completion rates are trying the hardest passes. So they're trying lots of long balls, lots of passes from the keeper, you know, lumping it forward to their center forward up top trying to get it. Those will always, you know, be low percentage passes, and the teams that have high pass completion rates are just doing a lot of short passes, you know, in the midfield. And I think there's some research that says you don't actually want your pass completion rate to be too high, because what that means is you aren't trying enough hard passes. Because there's a certain number of hard passes you need to try, like the hard through ball and the 20-yard diagonal ball every once in a while to keep the defense honest. So I would watch that a little bit, because I know there was one game where Fulham, I think, ended up with a 92% pass completion rate. Watching the game, I kind of got the impression that they weren't quite trying hard enough to play that really good final ball. They were more content to kind of kick it around rather than try to, you know, have that dagger pass. I know that's kind of stuff that Slavisa is probably aware of, and they're working on that. But it's a really good sign that you can, if you need to, play a lot of those short, easy passes. Because when you have the lead, if you can just kick the ball around and complete 90% of your passes, it's going to make it awfully hard for a team to come back on you.
Absolutely, and that's going to lead me to go over to Thomas. You're actually bringing up a stat that it's going to be interesting to you, Andrew, I think. When I go to whoscored.com, Thomas, I'm going to give you now the passing stats for the championship, and they're interesting. Let's start with crosses per game. Fulham are 13th with 20. This is the one that stands out because Andrew just mentioned this. Through balls per game, 3 for Fulham, and they are first. They average 3 per game, and they're first. The nearest team has 2 per game. Fulham actually averaged 3 per game of through balls. So I found that interesting. Long balls, Fulham are 21st with 69. Short passes, they were near the top of the championship all of last season. They were near the top, especially when Slavica came in. They are first with 479. So now I'll go to you, Thomas. What stands out to you from the passing stats from whoscored.com?
Obviously, the crossing I'm not very concerned about due to the fact that we play with Matt Smith a lot. And so I'm kind of surprised that we don't have more crosses than that, but I understand that we are trying to play the ball on the ground more as our team becomes faster and faster. And so that's why I'm not surprised at all to see the 3 through balls per game, us being first in the championship. Definitely makes sense to me. Because we really are playing the ground game a lot more than any other game we could play. And so I understand the stats, and I think that's about right. That's about what I would think that we are in comparison to the other championship teams. Because none of the championship teams I can think of kind of play the game we do, where we play with a lot of fast players. I think that's more of a Premier League thing, which is why I'm very excited, because I feel like Slavica is playing with players that he thinks could play at the Premier League level. And so I'm very excited, and I like what the sound of those stats.
Yeah, it's actually encouraging. That's why I thought about this today, that I would share these stats with you guys, bring out the stats. I know it's early, and we're talking 5 matches, but I think it's a little gauge into what's been going on with them lately, and it's a good sign. Some of these stats are a positive sign, but as Andrew mentioned, maybe a little misleading with the passing success stat, you know, or you might be a little bit concerned about that because you don't want it too high. That's a good point by him. All right, let's move on. Let's enter the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable. I've got a few topics for us to discuss, and I'm gonna start with you, Thomas. And this is an interesting one because this article has been passed around a great deal. It's got a lot of people talking about it. So I'm going to go to you first. Do you approve or disapprove of the reported both boxes check system described by Sam Wallace in his Telegraph article, as he has heard that Fulham give equal weight to traditional scouting along with analytics? Both need to be approved for a player to be signed. Do you approve of this? If this is the actual system, this is written by a writer, so let's call it speculation. But if they're doing this, do you approve of it or disapprove?
I approve of it. I think that if you let a manager have too much control and the traditional scouting have too much control, then he just brings in the players that he thinks will work, and maybe the manager actually doesn't know what will work. I think in the Premier League, Harry Redknapp for QPR brought in some players that you have no idea why they're in the Premier League at that time, but he brought them in and he thought they would work, and they did not work at all. And I think that the stats do say more than what a coach would say. And so I definitely approve. I think Slavica should be given more authority than maybe the scouts themselves, but I like what, obviously, Klein knows what he's doing. He's brought in a lot of good players. And so I'm actually beginning to become more on the Klein side than on the traditional scouting side. I really like what he's done with the team, and probably he's probably worked with Jokanović, so I kind of like what they've both done with the team and how they've worked together.
No, very interesting, and it's funny because I've said this on several occasions. I'm not against analytics being a part of it, as long as the manager and traditional scouting is a part of it too, as it's not the final decision. But what's interesting with this this speculation of both boxes being checked, meaning that each has equal weight, I kind of like it because it's a checks and balances system, Thomas. Both sides have to agree. One side does not have more power than the other. So I kind of like that again, this makes sure that everyone is in agreement. And I think that's a good strategy there, my friend. All right, I'm going to bring Andrew back on and get his thoughts on this. Andrew, thoughts on the both boxes check system. Do you approve or disapprove? Oh, sorry, I just blew that. That was a Goldman there. Andrew, are you back with me? Sorry about that.
Here.
Sorry
I'm
about
here.
That.
So yeah.
Do you approve
I've
or disapprove of the both boxes check system?
I highly approve. I've always been one that said it's like stats are great and scouts are great, and the correct approach isn't stats or scouts. It's always been stats and scouts. The only downside, and I think this is where you may have seen Slavisa get a little frustrated, is with certain players, especially in a sport like soccer, they don't actually have any game time, so there are no stats to evaluate them. And I think that was what he was frustrated with the particular players at Manchester United, that he wanted to bring in on loan. The scouts liked them, but there were simply no stats on them, so there was nothing for the stats to say yes or no on, and the team just basically said, well, we're not going to sign them. And you might miss out on a player or two like that. I mean,
right,
simply because there are no stats. But what it does save you from is the big mistake. If the stats and the scouts agree, you're much less likely to fail and bring in the big bust player than you are when both things agree. When both things agree, most likely the player at worst is going to be average. You're not going to bring in the big bust. And I think I think avoiding that is probably more important than hitting the home run 1 out of 10 times with the youth player who you really are just kind of rolling the dice on.
See, now that's a wonderful point, and Andy Glockner on SI.com wrote about that, and he wrote about the both boxes check system, and he mentioned bust in it, Andrew, and that's what stood out to me. If you can increase your odds of avoiding bust, I'm all for it, and if that means both sides have to agree, you do it. But I think this has a lot to do with what you just said, avoiding the bust, Andrew.
Yeah, exactly. And we've seen quite a few busts at Fulham over the years. I mean, for every once in a while you get the Moussa Dembele. And at one point, if you remember the Moussa Dembele, the older Moussa Dembele, he looked like he might be a bust because he was brought in after being a huge goal scorer in the Netherlands. And he was starting at forward and, kind of out on the wing and doing nothing for Fulham. Then Martin Jull kind of converted him to more like a deep line playmaker, and all of a sudden he was amazing. And I don't necessarily know that the stats would have told you that was something to do, but there were a lot of players like that who brought Fulham, spent a lot of money on, and they never quite lived up to it. There was Brian Ruiz, there was Mitroglou, Steck Ellenberg, just a lot of guys that got brought in and just for a lot of money and didn't really do something. And that really, really hurts you, especially with the financial fair play rules, where if you spend a lot of money and a guy can't produce, you can't just kind of put him on the bench and spend more money to fix it. You're kind of stuck with that guy until you can find someone else to take him off your hands. And in that environment we're in, I think avoiding the bust is much better for your club long term than gambling on 10 guys and hitting one home run.
No, listen, it's a great point. I'm gonna bring Thomas back on because, Thomas, I want to get your thoughts on this because I read this article by Andy Glockner, and very interesting because this was in response to the article from Sam Walls. And very interesting article. I highly recommend you go on SI.com And I never thought of it in the terms like Andy put it out there, but the one word that stood out to me was bust, trying to avoid the bust. And Andrew just talked about it. I think this is important. I think this is an important part of what they're trying to do. And if you can avoid the bust, you're going to do it. So thoughts on this angle of it, is the bolt boxes check system a big part of it trying to avoid the bust? Do you think?
Definitely. I think that when they saw what happened, what has happened with Mitroglou, what has happened with Stecklenburg, they really don't want that to happen again. Because when you're in the championship like we are, I know I saw someone on Twitter talking about how we've run out of parachute payment. And so
correct.
Now you don't always get that extra money to cover the losses. And so if you spend a lot of money on a guy and he doesn't pan out and bring you to the Premier League, then you're stuck with that loss. And then you have to make up for that so you don't go under an embargo. And then you have to sell people. And the players that we have now, I don't think there really are a lot of people that we want to sell. And so I really like the idea of avoiding the bust. If someone's risky and you don't know how it'll work, just don't do it. Because if you do it, it could really blow up in your face.
Right. And listen, we haven't seen some of these players play yet, Thomas. We're talking about Johansson, haven't seen Chris Martin, haven't seen Sigurdsson. We've only seen one match of Cabana. But what I've seen so far from all the players that have come in the transfer window, they've all contributed. And that's a very positive sign. I can't remember a window where all the players that have been brought in have contributed right away. So thoughts on that?
Definitely. I think that, like, obviously we have Jozabed came in, and in his first game against Middlesbrough, he played the whole time. Well, not the whole time, but 105 minutes. He played a long time. And so that was an instant impact from him. He came in and he did well. Odoi came in, has done well. Kalas has come in and done exceptionally. And so, I mean, I love what we've done with the team, and I love how every player that we've brought in so far, Aluka, they've all done well. None of them have, like, we haven't signed anyone who's looked bad. That's the good thing. There hasn't been a Richard Stearman or a Tim Ream. Scott Malone, who Cardiff fans were saying wasn't very good at all, he's looked really good so far.
Yeah.
He might have a tough time getting in the team now with Ryan Sessegnon, but I still think we should play Malone over Ryan Sessegnon because Malone reminds me a little bit of James Husband, in which he plays a very vertical game. I feel like he stands up a lot. He does a lot of what he does from a very tall position. Like Husband, when you see his pass to Tonnicliffe for the goal against Bristol City, he did that standing straight up, not bent over. And I think that's really good because he can keep his head up, he can look for a good pass, and he doesn't have his head in the ground and is completely focused on kicking the ball one way. He can always fake passing one way and go the other way, and I really like that.
Okay, very good. I'm going to bring Andrew back on. Andrew, our final topic is going to be best signing and favorite signing, but before we do that, I want to get your thoughts on what Thomas and I have just been talking about, because I've been watching Fulham for a long time now, and I can't remember a transfer window where I've seen contributions from everyone except for the players that have just come to the team. Everyone has contributed in some fashion, including Scott Malone. I think he's been a pleasant surprise. What are your thoughts on this? Again, does this go back to, does this enforce the potential of this speculation of the both boxes check system? If Fulham are doing that, this speaks well to what they've been doing so far.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, if the both boxes check gives you a transfer window like we've had this year, every transfer window, there's no reason not to do it because it's kind of been amazing. I think there were a couple of games this year where we started, there were 10 guys who were not on the squad last year in the starting lineup, and we're winning, and we're not winning all the time, but we haven't lost yet, and they've all looked pretty good. I mean, even the guys who were like Scott Malone, who people weren't real high on, he's looked good. And it's kind of been the thing, well, if he's the worst player on the pitch, you're not that bad off. So it's kind of amazing. It's even exceeded my expectations, because you would expect one of the guys they bring in to maybe not adjust, or one of the guys to maybe be not as good as they thought he was going to be. But pretty much everyone has come in and they've been able to do the job that they've been expected to do at the level they've been expected to do it, which is just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me stress one more time that we're talking about the both boxes check system from the article from Sam Wallace from the Telegraph. And it's, you know, it's written from a writer. It's a well-known writer, but it is speculation. Now, obviously, the club is not going to respond to what they're doing. But if he is correct and this is what they're doing, I like what they're doing because I think it's worked out well. If analytics and traditional scouting are working together to get us the players that we've got in this transfer window, they're doing something right. So let's just start there. Guys, final topic is going to be, I'm going to combine two topics into one. Andrew, I'm going to start with you. Who has been the best signing, and a little bit different, who's been your favorite signing of the transfer window?
The best signing is really, really hard because, I mean, there's so many good ones to choose from. But I'm going to say that the best signing was probably Kevin McDonald, simply because we haven't been able to find that player for multiple seasons now. And I think just having a strong guy in midfield who can shield the defense but can actually also distribute the ball is really, really important. I think that's why you've seen Scott Parker play better. It's taken a lot of the load off of Scott Parker and allowed him to play better. I think that's allowed the defense to play better because I know they've got a little bit of help in front of him, and he's distributing the ball well, which just makes all the players playing in the more attacking roles better. And he wasn't, a lot of times the center defensive midfielder doesn't get a lot of credit, but I think he's really been a huge asset to the team so far this year. So I think he's the best signing we've made. My favorite signing so far is probably Aluko. I just really like the way he plays. I think he's the perfect guy to play underneath a striker. He interchanges well with the other three attacking players, and he can play, either any of the three attacking midfield positions, and I've just love the way he plays, and I think he's even gotten unlucky not to have scored more because he's created a lot of good chances, and just he hasn't gotten a little bit unlucky hitting the post, that sort of thing. I think he's got a chance to score quite a few goals this year.
He's pure energy. He plays hard, as we would say. He plays very hard, and I like both of your choices there, my friend. Thomas, over to you. Best signing and favorite signing.
Best signing, I will agree with Andrew, that is Kevin McDonald. He's been maybe the best player. Kearney might be a little bit better than him, but I think that McDonald definitely was one of the best players in our start to the season. And so I'm really looking forward to watching a full season of Kevin McDonald. Favorite signing, probably, I really like Josebed. I think he'll be a really good player for us. He definitely adds another level of creativity. Obviously, they say he was the best and most influential creator for a team in La Liga last year. And so I definitely am very excited to see what he offers to the team alongside Kearney. I think having both of those players is really nice.
No, very good. And again, it goes back to Thomas talking about choices. We have options. Savica has several options. And that's what's great about this transfer window. There are options everywhere now. I will say that the best signing, I'm going to go to the two of you and say Kevin McDonald for the reasons, Andrew, that you said. I agree 100%. When you don't have that player, things aren't functioning the way that they should. Now they have that player. Kevin McDonald is the best signing, and he's also my favorite signing. I'm going hand-in-hand with that because I wanted that type of player for the longest time. So he is my favorite signing as well. All right, guys, it's time to wrap up this show. I want to get final thoughts from both of you. First, I'll start with you, Thomas. Final thoughts?
Thanks for having me on the show. Obviously, I didn't get to say anything. I enjoyed it a lot. I didn't say anything about Jack Grimmer. I'd like to say something really short. I think he's...
Sure, go ahead.
I don't know if he's going to make it. I know that Mike, I think, he's a really big Jack Grimmer fan. But
he is.
I hate to say it, but I don't think he's going to make it. He's got, now he's blocked by Fredericks and Odoi. and I just don't see him making the team. I think he might, you might see him permanently moving clubs in the next window.
Okay, very good. Mike is very protective of the youngsters. And he's very fond of Jack Rimmer, so that's a good point by you. I do wish him the best at Shrewsbury Town. Andrew, final words, final thoughts.
I'm just really excited to see Fulham play again. I think it's really exciting because we've got two games coming up where I think we should be like the clear favorites. Birmingham City isn't very good. Burton Albion's one of the newly promoted teams. It wouldn't shock me to see us get more than 10 points in September and keep up kind of the pace we're on. Plus, I think we could probably beat Bristol City in the League Cup. So, I mean, continuing on in the League Cup and getting 10 points this month would be one of the best months Fulham's ever had, followed by one of the best months Fulham has ever had. So I'm excited by it all.
I am too, my friend. Listen, the month of September is massive, and my final thoughts go to the month of September, because if Fulham come out of this month doing very well, like you had just mentioned, Andrew, we could be in very good shape. Because after that, see, the first 12 matches are really the easier part of the fixtures. Then we go to a more difficult part of the fixtures. Then we go to an easier part, and the end is going to be difficult as well. So they need to be winning these matches and getting as many points as they can. Seriously, right now and through mid-October, then it's really going to start getting hard. If you look at the fixtures, you're going to see what I'm talking about. So now is the time to get your points, and there's opportunities there. I will say this before we go, that Birmingham City is going to be a tough match. We'll be talking about that on Friday. Gary Rowett knows how to play, and he will have his team set up to beat us on the counter. So they're going to try to frustrate Fulham. So I don't think it's going to be an easy match at all. In fact, I think it's going to be a difficult one. I think it's a match Fulham can win, but I don't think it's going to be easy, because this is a tough opponent. It really is. I have a lot of respect for Gary Rowett and Birmingham City, so we shall see. Okay, Andrew, do you just tell everyone how they can follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, the Twitter account is CottagersC, and the website is CottagersConfidential.com. And just if you aren't already reading us, please check us out. Follow us on Twitter. We try not to post too many stories a day, so we don't clog your Twitter feed, but we'd love to have more readers.
Absolutely. Please do go to the website, CottagersConfidential.com, or CottagersConfidential.SBNation.com is the proper website name right now. And I'm the original editor, but Andrew is doing a phenomenal job as the editor of Cottagers Confidential. It's a wonderful website, and I highly recommend you go in there. Thomas is a writer. Thomas, how can people follow you on Twitter?
They can follow me at ThomasErie541. And yeah, I don't post a lot of stuff, like Andrew said. I don't want to clog your Twitter feed with meaningless tweets. I basically only tweet about Fulham and a little bit about the Texas Rangers. So,
okay, really my friend, great show. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, nothing more. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, listen, Thomas, you're welcome anytime. Andrew, you were fantastic. You both were great. This was a wonderful episode. A great Labor Day for me. This really was a wonderful show that I can talk about Fulham on Labor Day. What's better than that? But it is time to wrap it up. For Andrew and Thomas, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys. Have a great night.
Cheers.
Have a good day. Boys.